I've never seen the Pentagon, the CIA act together like that in defiance of their political bosses to oppose a war. And so I think these leaks over the last couple of weeks really demonstrate where the American military is in terms of not wanting to fight this war, because they know that at best it's going to be a stalemate, but more than likely it's going to mean an American loss.
Welcome to the Deep Focus Show. I'm going to be your host for the next month. My name is Richard Wolf, and I want to thank you for joining us and to remind you, please, to like, subscribe, and share so we can continue to produce and bring to you these in-depth conversations. Joining me today is Matthew Ho, foreign policy analyst, senior fellow at the Eisenhower Media Network, former captain in the U.S. Marine Corps, who served tours in Iraq and Afghanistan, and a former State Department officer as well. So first of all, welcome to the show, Matthew, and thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me join you, Rick.
Okay. I'm going to talk to you about things that will not surprise you. The first one is really this. The war of Israel and the United States against Iran is now, whatever it is, 60-odd days old. Yes, it's been interrupted more or less by ceasefires, not-so-ceasefires, negotiations that maybe aren't negotiations, an extraordinary on-and-off-again saga, which has been enraging most of the people trying to keep track of it, although we learned this morning that it can make a lot of money for people who know in advance which way the price of oil is going to go. But I want, and our audience would benefit from hearing, what you think is going on here. What's the sense you can try to help us make of where this war is, what the point is, and where it's going?
Well, I think there's many who are responsible for this war. Certainly, if you were to put them all in a room, the audience would be quite large. But for me, this comes down to a confrontation, a war, a delineation between the 20th century and 21st century. That this is essentially a war of the American imperial order, the American century versus the nascent multipolar world. And we could see this not just in the way the war is being fought between the United States and Iran, but we can also see as well as what the objectives are, what both sides are trying to accomplish. The United States trying to hold on to its imperial order, trying to hold on to the last century, while Iran certainly represents these, not just itself, but I think, you know, the multipolar world and rising powers and a new age, you know, et cetera.
Let me draw you out a little bit more, because this is so important. Would you agree with the following, that the United States, you could divide people in our country? You know, I was born in Ohio. I've lived and worked all my life in the United States. We could divide our people into two groups. One who more or less understands what you just said, and another group that more or less denies everything you just said. They don't want to see it. They don't want to feel it. They reject it. But I'm wondering, do you share this notion of a country divided between deniers and those that accept at least the idea that we may be in that kind of a change?
I think what you see certainly among the American public, and we could break this out demographically, certainly by age, is an acceptance of this new era, acceptance of a multipolar world, acceptance that the past is the past, and we are now leaning into a new order here. The issue I see, though, Rick, is the sense that for the political class, there's not that acceptance. That you have different degrees or different shades, or they articulate it variously. But overall, the political class is trying to hold on to the good thing they once had, right? So trying to hold on to that American empire, trying to hold on to the imperial order, trying to hold on to the 20th century. And you could see that, say, in the way that the Biden administration would approach issues like this. I mean, you can't imagine Joe Biden or Tony Blinken or Jake Sullivan admitting that the United States was part of a multipolar world, that the United States was no longer the hegemon and the United States no longer had primacy. I think Joe Biden, Tony Blinken, and Jake Sullivan and others will go to their deathbeds gripping to that idea. In the same way, you saw Donald Trump's administration, particularly, say, last fall when they put out their national security strategy, embrace the idea of a multipolar world, embrace the idea of recalibrating or resetting or reorienting the American empire, not to compete in a multipolar world, but to dominate it, right? So to anchor the United States in the Western Hemisphere, to pull back from where it is overextended. Now, that made it onto the paper that they wrote the national security strategy on, but certainly that's nowhere to be seen in the Trump administration's actual policies. And so I think you'd be real hard pressed, Rick, to find an institution or even a congressional office in Washington, D.C., that in some way or form doesn't hold on to this idea of the American century, of the 20th century power that the United States once was, and so forth.
This is very interesting. Last point on this. Do you see, do you expect that the younger folks who accept the premise are or are not able to persuade their parents, the previous generation? Do you see anything like that happening?
I think, you know, again, the public opinion polling in terms of say, just with this war on Iran, who supports this war on Iran? The public opinion numbers show us the only people who are supportive of this war in the United States are the oldest members of the Republican Party, right? By and large, every other demographic believes this war is a mistake. It's wrong. Doesn't need to be fought. You know, larger issues of America's role in the world, its position as a superpower, I think falls into as a lone superpower, as being, you know, a benevolent empire, Pax Americana, all these phrases we have for it, particularly after the end of the Cold War. I think that falls largely along demographic lines too. And I think this is a generational tale, right? This is not unique to 2026. This has occurred throughout history. Both the differences in ages, understanding the reality of the world around them, as well as the life cycle of empires. And so that's what we're going through right now. We're going through the end of the life cycle of the American empire. And this war, I really do believe, will be the war that historians use to delineate the end of the American empire, the end of the American century, the beginning of the 21st century, the multipolar world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
All right. I want to switch a little bit now, Matthew, and ask you to use your experience. You were a Marine. You had tours of duty in active areas of war, Iraq and Afghanistan. You've worked on this. You're in a really good position to answer a question millions of Americans are wondering. Did the American military not understand what the military capability of Iran was? And the same question from another side. If what we're now hearing, which is that the American bases in the Gulf area have been badly damaged and could not protect themselves from that damage from Iran, and if the naval blockade is very nice for television, mm-hmm. but doesn't do much to change the equation there, then we're talking about a military and an intelligence apparatus with the military that's really not very good. And that's not what we've been led to expect. Can you help us with anything here?
Yeah. First of all, I think your last point there, Rick, is dead on. The American intelligence services, along with the Israeli intelligence services, so primarily, say, a CIA and the Mossad as the primary foreign intelligence services for these for Israeli United States, are not what Hollywood tells us they are. It's not what David Ignatius writes about in the Washington Post. It's not what Eric Schmidt or David Sanger write about in the New York Times. I mean, you know, that they are flawed. They have very little information from the actual ground source. They oftentimes are victims of their own mythology. They believe, you know, I have another friend named Rick. He says all the time, you know, these people get high on their own gaslighting. I mean, so that's, I think, what you're seeing here is you're seeing an American intelligence capability that just really isn't that robust, that really isn't that deep, that doesn't penetrate into knowing what the Iranians actually have. The other problem, though, you have alongside of that, and both of these coexist and cause this catastrophe that we are now enduring, is the politicized nature of the intelligence services. You know, the idea that nothing gets up through the filter to the White House, right? To the Secretary of Defense's office, to the Secretary of State's office, that doesn't go through some type of vetting process that ensures that this is what the boss wants to hear. Right. And this is exactly what we saw, of course, with the Iraq War. And it's no different. I actually had an experience where I had to go testify once to the President's Intelligence Advisory Board on why people like myself and others who were dissenting against the Afghan war, why what we were saying was not what was showing up on the president's desk. And I think everyone who understands what happens in the Afghan war knows that those of us who dissented were the ones who actually had the correct information. So you've got these two aspects of this that provide at best inaccurate intelligence, more likely highly politicized intelligence, and then actually probably what we really see highly politicized inaccurate intelligence. I mean, so the inability of the United States. Now what we're seeing now, which is the point I want to get across, though, because we just had another story come out of the Washington Post about how CIA estimates or that the Iranians will be able to hold on for months, even if this blockade was real. And I agree with you, Rick. I think it's mostly just a press release. It's very porous. It's meant for more show than actual effect. But even if it was real, the Iranians are going to be able to hang on for months before severe economic strain forces them to consider any type of capitulation with regards to this war. And that's the latest leak to the major American corporate media outlets, all reliable national security friendships, relationships. So we saw leaks from the Pentagon and from the CIA over the last couple of weeks to the New York Times, to CNN, to NBC News, and now to the Washington Post. And these leaks are saying the Iranians have their missiles and drone fleets. We barely dented them. We have fired off over half of our Patriot missiles and THAAD missiles and JASSM missiles. The Iranians have destroyed 16 of our bases throughout the Middle East. We can't use those bases anymore. And now we have this report from the Washington Post based on leaked material from the CIA saying, like, the blockade doesn't matter. It's not going to affect the Iranians. And of course, anyone who's reading this is now juxtaposing it against how well the United States is going to be able to handle the economic consequences of this war. And I think most of us will put our money on the Iranians being able to weather this much better than the Americans will, both the public, the economy, and the political system. So what you're seeing here, which is really remarkable, because I'm not certain of another time this has happened. You have a coordinated, deliberate effort coming from both the CIA and from the Department of Defense to the major American media saying, do not restart this war. We are losing this war. We will continue to lose this war, and we will eventually lose this war against the Iranians if it's restarted. I've never seen the Pentagon, the CIA act together like that in defiance of their political bosses to oppose a war. And so I think these leaks over the last couple of weeks really demonstrate where the American military is in terms of not wanting to fight this war, because they know that at best it's going to be a stalemate, but more than likely it's going to mean an American loss.
I'm going to ask you what I suspect is a stupid question, so bear with me. I do that from time to time. Everything you said reminds me of what I thought I understood, which is that leaders with half a brain know that a bureaucracy tends to do what you described, to vet and filter so that the boss doesn't get angry and throw an eraser at them because it's disturbing what you've given him. But that is offset by knowing he's got to know the truth. And if there are differing assessments of what the situation is, he has to know that. He may go with one or the other, but to be deliberately ignorant can't possibly be a smart move. So if I believe you, and I do, then you're telling me what a number of people do try to tell me, and I keep resisting, and maybe I shouldn't, which is I keep resisting the idea that the people at the top really aren't very good at their jobs, and that they are eager to be pleased with confirmation of their view rather than with a clash of views they can then choose among.
I think that's the terrifying reality that we have here. I know a lot of people want to ascribe what's occurring to some type of five-dimensional chess that Donald Trump is playing. These people do think they are operating on a grand chessboard. They and this goes not just for this administration, but for previous administrations, both Democrats and Republicans. They believe themselves to be the acolytes of Zbigniew Brzezinski and Henry Kissinger. And so, again, that they are operating with this, you know, chessboard motif, this grand chessboard motif. But for the most part, they are, as you described them, Rick. They have very limited understanding of the world. They view things primarily through the lens of American domestic politics. This is why they never feel American adversaries are sincere. One thing I found in the wars I took part in, you might not like the Iraqi resistance or you might not like the Afghan Taliban, but they're sincere. They mean what they say. And when you're talking to your political bosses and they see everything in the guise of what they've come through all their life, an American political campaign, they don't have that ability to understand their adversary that way. I mean, that's just one example here. But now, of course, we have not just a kleptocracy. We have a kakistocracy, right? The worst of the worst in power. And so when you see a man like Pete Hegseth, just emitting these word salads in front of the House of Representatives or the Senate in his testimony, you know, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's not trying to obfuscate. He's not trying to be deliberately vague. He's not trying to channel Donald Rumsfeld and talk about known knowns and known unknowns and unknown unknowns. Pete Hegseth generally doesn't know what he's doing. And I think that is what we have to grapple with here. And I said earlier today, another program, I never thought being, you know, an analyst now doing this work for 15 some odd, 17 years, however long, that I'd ever be in a position where I wouldn't be able to analyze or interpret or understand the U.S. position less than I could a foreign position. And I feel that way now, that essentially trying to understand what this administration is doing or is going to do is a fool's errand.
Listen, we're running out of time, and in the less than 2 minutes we have left, I want to pick your brain on something. Given everything you've been saying to us now and your long study of this material, how do you respond to comments made by some of our highest leaders that we are all on some unchangeable trip towards a war with China, which, if you believe it, the whole world is going to be trembling for the years coming as we get closer to something like that. And we only have a minute, but what's your gut reaction when you must hear that, as I do?
Oh, it's so dangerous, right? And it's not even that the United States can't defeat Iran. Both the Biden administration and Trump administration tried to defeat Ansar Allah, the Houthis in Yemen. And they couldn't do that. Both the Biden administration and Trump administration had to retreat from the Red Sea. We can't get our aircraft carriers within 1,000 kilometers of the Iranian coastline. We're running out of missiles after 4 weeks of war with Iran, but we're going to fight China. I mean, so the insanity of it. But that goes back again, Rick, to my understanding of the United States' empire. And that following the Cold War, the necessity of the empire to have this enemy, this adversary, this opponent in China, as it understood China to be the greatest threat to the American empire. And so that has been institutionalized. It's become part of the Washington, D.C. culture. Remind people, certainly this was the way the Clinton administration was leaning towards the end of the Clinton administration, focusing on China. When Condoleezza Rice comes into the White House as a national security advisor in 2001, she speaks of China as being the biggest threat, her biggest concern as the American national security advisor, right? I mean, so this is something that now we're on the second or third generation of American policymakers who have this habituation, this belief, this necessity for China as the inevitable conflict the United States must face. And so we have made our dementia, our insanity, our imperial lunacy into a reality that we, at this point, I have a hard time believing that we can undo.
Matthew Hall, you've been very, very interesting. I want to thank you for joining us, giving the benefit of your work and your thinking. I sure hope more people than ever will listen and process what you've had to say. And to the audience, I want to thank you for tuning in on Deep Focus. Please remember to like and subscribe to the Deep Focus channel, and also keep up with me in our partnership with WBAI. By our, I mean Democracy at Work. And you can go to their website, democracyatwork.info, to learn more about that. Thank you, and see you soon again.